Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome to Stacking Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Matt Wilbur on the board. I think we have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us. S&P futures were continuing the bounce. Buy the dip. Here's the bounce. S&P futures are up 26. Nasdaq futures up 143. Bounces and all the stuff that was down. Apple up $1.50. We got Boeing up 266. We got Microsoft, which had gotten hammered, is up 292. So we're definitely moving in that direction, which is probably a good thing. Kevin, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. So, buy the dip, would that be like the name for the softball team for Stocks and Jocks?
Well, whenever I think of the dip, there was a guy on the trading floor, a broker, who actually, he wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer sometimes. He was his acronym was DIP. Now, why would anybody want that as their acronym?
You either have to be the dumbest guy in the room, which it sounds like maybe he was, or just the most confident guy in the room.
He was not that.
Where you can walk around with DIP.
Yeah, when you're clearly in on the joke, it's okay. When you're not, you're just a dork.
Well, he worked for one of the firms. They had like 8 brokers in the OEX at one point, and he was down in the middle of the pit. So all of a sudden, one day, all around him, everybody just backed off. To where it was in the middle is this huge hole in the pit with just him. Well, it turns out that he had worn 2 separate shoes. Well, we're not talking about, you know, a pair of, one pair of Nike running shoes and another was like very close to it. One was like a pair of running shoe and the other was like a boat shoe. Like the, so everybody just backed off and was pointing at his feet. The middle of the pit. There wasn't a whole lot of political correctness.
So, yes, you're either looking at him and saying he's crazy, we better stay away from him and not cross him, or we better stay away from him because he's laughably stupid. And he'll, you know, stupid is one of those things that works like a vortex, you know, when you're on the edge of it, no big deal, right? It's just a vortex, and you say it's like the swirling waters going down the drain, and you get a little bit, you know, you sort of step up and look at it a little closer, and next thing you know, you've taken one step too close, and now you're swirling around in the water. You don't want to be dragged into that stupidity vortex.
Well, I have a couple things I was going to read. One is kind of a...
And by the way, I always refer to that as a softball term when we talk about, you know, there's just some softball teams or basketball teams, too, that will just drag you into their vortex, and now next thing you know, you are just playing the stupidest game of your life right alongside them.
Well, the Bulls last night, had one guy scored like 40 points. Where did he come from? The guy had every one of their starters was out. Tampa Bay.
Yeah, they were all auditioning for their all of the Toronto players were auditioning for their next NBA gig, wherever that may be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got a couple things to read. One is interesting, kind of funny, but also somewhat interesting regarding the work at home stuff in regards to interpersonal relationships. And the other is I didn't find one of our most staunch listeners, Mr. Paul. Sent me this thing. There was a huge conference on ransomware, evidently. Who knows where? I mean, and I want to read their recommendations on paying ransom. And I'll be as brief as possible. But when you hear me read it, you realize how bleeped up we are. Talk about a line of BS. So you can't tell what the hell they're talking about. But the Dilbert one. Dilbert is out for a walk with his buddy Dogbert. Right? Dogbert's always a riot. This is another, he's working from home, right? So Dogbert says, they say most people meet their future mates at work. Says, now that you're working from home, your odds of mating have just turned negative. He's telling us that Dilbert. You could try using a dating app to find a woman, but then you'd need to rely on your looks. Obviously, that's a dead end. Your best chance of reproduction has always been to wear down a coworker over several years. Manny, is this something familiar? Women need time to get over your appearance and to appreciate your inner qualities. So we should have a goodbye party for your jeans. And Dilbert says to him, and Dilbert says, maybe next time we can just walk and not talk. And Dogbert says, well, maybe. A retirement party for your jeans. I love that. Unless you can be next to somebody for years and they actually like your inner qualities, you have no chance. But it's scary, isn't it? I don't know. I just thought that was kind of...
Oh, my. Yeah, yes, we live in a wonderful world nowadays, yeah. Don't we?
Yes. Well, the other one is, again, sent by my Frozen viewer, where I'm coming on this. It turns out this Colonial Pipeline paid a ransom to get back going, right? This is after dealing with the... I'm going to say the government, and I'm going to say this current administration, although I'm not so sure that any of them made any difference because they've all been involved in this thing. And I've been getting various and sundry stuff from listeners, and by the way, thank you, regarding how many people have paid off in the last few years with basically no help from governments. And nobody, it appears, has been prosecuted, nobody's been killed, nobody's been anything. And as you might expect, it's gotten worse and worse and worse. It's pretty much like, you know, people stealing money out of bank accounts and the banks... Pay people, and then they have insurance, and then the police. I mean, it's endemic. Okay, but now here's a task force on combating ransomware. Right, I gotta go back 40 some pages to find out. I suppose I should figure out who the hell's on this thing, but it's very, very formal. But it's a task force, Kevin. It's a task force. So then here's tell me, we used to have a word for this on the South Side, or a phrase. Well, you can judge for yourself, but in my mind, it's called mealy mouth. I'll try and read this fast. A note on prohibiting ransomware payments. The question of whether to prohibit payments of ransom has been increasingly pressing. It was raised by every working group in the task force. The argument in favor of a ransom ban holds that ransomware is primarily motivated by profit. If the potential for a payout is removed, attackers will shift away from this tactic. The further argument is that ransom profits are used to fund more pernicious crimes such as human trafficking, child exploitation, terrorism, creation of weapons of mass destruction, blah, blah. When viewed with that lens, the case for prohibiting payments is clear. The challenge comes in determining how to make such measures practical, as there remains a lack of organized cybersecurity maturity across sectors, sizes of organizations, and geographies. Ransomware attackers require little risk or effort to launch attacks, so prohibition on ransom payments would not necessarily lead them to move in other areas. Where they would likely continue to mount attacks and test the resolve of both victim organizations and their regulatory authorities. To apply additional pressure, they would target organizations considered more essential to society, like a pipeline, such as healthcare providers, local governments, and other custodians of critical infrastructure, like a pipeline. Were a government to take a hardline approach on non-payment, perhaps even offering to shore up victims in their jurisdiction in some manner, attackers would look for other potential targets before moving on to new sources of revenue. This means they will focus on countries or sectors where governments have not implemented the same policy or are unable to provide a safety net for victims. Even in jurisdictions that offer support of critical entities, organizations that are not qualified for the support may instead pay the ransom without disclosing the incident. This could then open them up to further... Is this the biggest line of BS you've ever heard in your life? What are these guys talking about?
It's jargon-loaded and stupid. But that's kind of the world. but in reality, the way excuse me, clear my throat. The only way that the only reasonable way to deal with this is preparation. And as I told you via email, you can sort of smell that especially if you've been around it enough. And I've been writing, DR plans and testing DR plans and all of that for years. So I'm pretty familiar with how it works. And you can just smell the lack of preparedness. You can just see it in the response. And so if impaired and you are not able to reconstruct your systems quickly, your networks quickly, then you're left with no choice but to pay or get knocked out of business. So that's your real problem. Now there's another piece to that too, where they said they exported data and said that they would release the data, and I'm sure there's some competitive stuff that Colonial wouldn't want to get out. But inevitably, if you release everybody a corporation's data, you're inevitably going to find embarrassing stuff in there too that they probably don't want out. So there's probably stuff tied to the amoral people who and some of their communications as well. But really, what you have to do, first of all, you can take all kinds of steps to harden your network. And you can't make it foolproof, but you can make it harder to get through. You can make it very difficult to get through. And there's the standard penetration part of it that everybody does, where they're out there just scanning constantly scanning everything you do, seeing if there's a hole that they can punch in your defenses. But the biggest vector for penetration is the employees. Carl just put up something about it today, and he'll probably talk about it in the second hour. And a lot of it is, they're allowing people to do, Facebook and, social media and all kinds of personal stuff on their networks instead of locking that out. And those are good sources for intrusions. And so, there's a big training element that's part of it. And I would say but what always scared me more than anything else was that I could lock down the network and make it make it pretty darn bulletproof. But as soon as someone takes that laptop off of the network and goes home with it, now they're not on my network. They're on a much less secure network, home network, hotel network, coffee house network, any of those. And again, there's ways to make the computers, the individual computers, more difficult to penetrate. But it's expensive, and companies keep making the cost decision. They don't look at it as insurance. They look at it as expense. So in a lot of ways that they would never, ever go without insurance in other parts of the business. But when it comes to the insurance of buying the right kinds of defensive measures for intrusions, they don't do it. And you see the result. Now, when I say people take their computers home and they're off network, what has half of the world done this last year? They're off network. And as soon as my computer gets compromised on my home network, and then I either take it back to the business network, or I just connect to the VPN, and just get my into the network there, then the network's compromised. And that's a problem. That's one of the biggest problems you face. If there's anything that should keep our listeners who own businesses and manage businesses up at night, it's what's going on with the off-network stuff. Because it's just whatever compromises happen there are going to be brought back to the business.
We're talking as a practical guy who runs a business in the world we live in. Everything you say is absolutely true. Where I'm coming from this is another direction is, I know that everybody who listens to this show pays a bleep load in taxes, and there are hundreds of thousands of people in our government at all levels that are there because they claim that they're protecting us or doing something. And where I'm going with this, Kevin, is it's a totally different... I mean, I'm going to say that when I first moved into the hood where I am now, Audrey comes over and, of course, somebody breaks into her car. And pees in it, right? I couldn't just break into it, and pees in it. So I call the police, and they want to give me the insurance number on the phone. I said, she's pretty broken up about this. Can't you send somebody by at least to make a show of it? Oh, no, we don't do that. So, how many of these people have you caught, ever? Well, never. We don't. It's like we don't even look, so we're not going to... At some point...
And it makes you laugh at that. Serve and protect.
Yeah, but now
part on the card.
We have the part I know about in the financial industry. People take and say, it reaches the point where these are, it's not a, I mean, I understand that, oh, let's put it this way, let's be basic. Why does somebody get a burglar alarm in their car or their house? And I mean, let's be south side here. Why do you get one? So the bleep will move to the guy next door's house. You're not going to stop him. So the only way you're going to stop somebody is to catch them.
Right, it's the same thing. If you get a really big growling dog, then it's okay, I'll go next door.
Yeah, I'll go next door. So at some point, we have identified, since time immemorial, that they're, how, no matter what we do, no matter how many free lunches we give out, no matter what we do, no matter how, whatever we, there are bad people in this world. And there are parents that have 7 or 8 kids, and 6 or 7 of them are going to be Nobel Peace Prize winners, and one of them is a crook. It just, unfortunately, some people, no matter what you do, that's just how they land. And the only way you're going to deal with it is to catch them. They used to flog them. We don't do that anymore. Put them in jail. I guess kill them. I'm not for that. But you can't just say, if everybody in business was careful, we wouldn't have a ransomware problem. We would, because we have people that do that, and they think it's cool, and they love doing it, and maybe they enjoy it, maybe they like the money, whatever it is. And the only way you're going to get them is to catch them. And every single time you pay one, I mean, where am I wrong here? Is this my?
How do you catch somebody in Russia?
I didn't say it was easy.
Well, it's impossible.
Nothing's impossible.
Well, I mean, it literally, unless you form some sort of alliance with Eastern European countries and China and Russia, then what are you going to do?
So we should just throw our hands up?
No, you have to take other measures.
Well, yeah,
you have to turn it into a Mission Impossible episode.
But we have to understand, first of all,
and disavow any knowledge if they get caught.
Well, the first thing you need to do, Manny, and by the way, I'm with you on this.
I mean, it's common sense. Oh, I mean, you're expecting Chicago police to stop the Russian mob?
If you absolve yourself totally from it, you're never going to get there. You're never going to get there. If you just say,
I agree with that, but literally, what can you do? Well, unless you create some sort of coalition with those countries.
I'm not the person that can tell you. By the way, you could tell me a lot better than I can tell you. Know that
I am telling you. You can't do anything. Okay, you actually have to take it in your own hands.
Okay, but don't have 58 people standing there making $150,000 a year that I'm paying you, and then you tell me you can't do anything. Quit. At least I don't want to pay you.
I don't know who those people are that you're talking about.
I'm saying you don't think we have people who are, this is their job?
I'm sure we do. The FBI, I guess.
Well, I'm saying, just like the guy who peed in Audrey's car, we have a policeman sitting at the place and can't drive by. Well, then fire yourself.
Well, I agree with you on that.
I mean, my point is,
I'm talking very specifically, all of this comes from basically 5 places.
I'm going
to
say
that we don't have any sort of way to police it.
I will bet you that there is some lower level ransomware stuff. And there's some lower level stealing money out of people's bank accounts that is happening right here.
Could be.
And the assumption is, oh, they're all in Russia. No, they aren't. We had an incident at PTI 5 years ago. The guy was in Brooklyn. And I still to this day can't get a policeman to go to the guy's office and knock on the door.
Well, that would be different. I can tell you that our research, it's like 99.9%.
I believe you.
Comes from basically 5
right,
places.
Right, but you're also dealing with real big people.
Yeah, and it's bigger that I'm talking about. And I'm sure, and of course, there's going to be, you know, identity theft. There's going to be hacks. It could happen anywhere, certainly. But the concentrated stuff, the stuff that's hacking into government agencies, that's hacking into Colonial, that's hacking into, you know, all the huge breaches that you read about, it's not somebody in someone's basement out in the suburbs. I mean, it's people that go to an office building every day, and their job, their full-time job in Russia or China or, you know, Ukraine, wherever they're doing it, is literally trying to hack into systems.
I don't think, even though, Andy, the firm you work at, I'm sure is one of the best, I'm going to say, even you guys have no idea, maybe you do. Maybe you don't have an idea of exactly how much resources governments have and when they want to put their mind to it.
Well, the FBI comes and, you know, comes and visits us all the time and speaks at our, you know, sort of like our sales conferences and things like that. I mean, they absolutely do have a cybersecurity division that grows exponentially every year. There's no doubt about it.
I'm sure they do.
And they
the budget keeps getting bigger.
Of course. And they do work with, you know, they are, you know, building relationships in those countries with those foreign governments to try and bring certain people to justice. But it's you know, obviously I'm just going by what they're saying, but it is very, very difficult.
I would say that it's like the SEC. We're ineffective, double our budget.
Well, if you're arguing about the governmental agency budgets, I think you, me, and Kevin are in complete agreement.
Well, I'm saying I am not smart enough to come up with the answer, but I do know that the attitude to turn the blame back to the company, or to turn the blame back to the person who got his car stolen or broken into, or the person who... you shouldn't be an 80-year-old lady on a walker with your purse hanging out there. You deserve to get stolen. Why is that my problem as a policeman? We can't go down that road with people we're paying. And we're doing it. We're going down that road. They're telling us...
And Tom, I get what you're saying, but there's also the business does have its own responsibility for diligence. Part of that is tied into, if it's a publicly traded company, then, you know, you absolutely owe that, and because your investors should want to know, and that should be, you know, the kind of a question that that an investor would ask. I know it's not, but it should.
Well, I'm with you. I'm just saying.
Part two is when you're a regulated industry in critical infrastructure in the United States, then they should be subject to the some kind of standards, which it, you know, electric companies are and pipelines are not.
I just don't.
And then subject to audit. So if you want to have cybersecurity experts on the government payroll, one of the things they could be doing is coming in and citing critical infrastructure companies and regulated industries for their failure to properly harden their networks. And there happens to be a report that I shared with you last night about a third-party audit of Colonials from it's a few years old, saying it, you know, an eighth grader could basically penetrate their defenses. I'm sure they have done some work on it since then, because nobody wants that hanging out in an audit. But that, you know, it doesn't appear to be a ready company, because if they were really ready, you would see a totally different public face of the response to go with their private response, and they wouldn't be paying the ransom if they were ready.
Well,
they would have their systems back online in short order instead. And so I get your point about it would be nice that if some of the law enforcement agencies were more effective, but there's still a big responsibility for the corporation, and all appearances to the outside world make it look to me like Colonial was not prepared.
I know I'm having a
Robert discussion. Writes in and says, we've gone to war for a lot less.
He's right. I'm very aware in this conversation, by the way, that I'm discussing this with two people that know 20 times more than me on the subject. But I do know a few things. And one is, if Kevin puts in the big burglar alarm at his house, and Maddie puts his in, and I'm reluctant to put mine in, and I get my place robbed, the last thing I need is the policeman fining me because I didn't have a system. That doesn't make me the crook, and that's where we're heading down this road, and we can't go.
I understand that, but you're not. Your house is not. It's not a public good. It's not. Again, you know, if you're going to run a pipeline organization, even if you're privately held, it doesn't matter. You are granted access to the rights of ways to run your pipeline via the government, because it's critical infrastructure for the country, and therefore there should be some standards that are enforceable.
Don't disagree.
So that we don't have what we had in the last week, or so that we minimize the chances. And I don't see, you know, then you start working, you know, the public facing concept would be to try and build a trust bank. But, you know, you need to build that inside your company anyway. And what I mean by that is that you make sure that everybody, not only are you doing the right things to do the best you can to secure your network, but that you're making sure everybody understands that you're doing the right
things. Well, Kevin, it reaches...
Then when Colonial has a breach, we might feel a little more sorry for them rather than, reading about an audit report saying that they had laughable network security.
Well, what kind of security... do people need to have? I mean, I guess my point is, at what point, how much are we going to shove this, you know, on the person? All right, now I'm going to say that railroads have a right-of-way. Okay, pipelines have a right-of-way. Now, we have everybody deciding now they need their own friggin' drone, right? If they can carry Amazon stuff to my house, they can carry a small bomb, all right? I'm not giving people directions here. I'm going to say that if you can do that,
right.
we could drop a small bomb on how many pieces of railroad? I mean, how much of the thousands of miles of Union Pacific or those people do you watch the rails every day? I mean, how much of this pipeline, the thing's 5,500 miles long, are we going to need a guard every mile because we're watching for drones or radar? I mean, at what point do you foster security and somebody who's doing something law-abiding where it's their job to protect against any nefarious thing anybody else can ever do? That at some point, we have decided as a society that, well, maybe we're going back the other way, that I don't have to carry a rifle to guard my house. That's the police's job. And we have to be very careful when we back off of that. Do we want Colonial Pipeline to hire the Pinkertons, like they used to in the old days, that they can't trust the police to do anything? Do we want massive private security firms that people now have to hire because the police and FBI decide it's over their head? I mean, once we get on this road, this is what I'm worried about. I know you guys are right, and I know Colonial should have done a better job, and blah, blah. I know you guys are right. I'm just trying to think forward. And when I think forward, I usually see, like, really awful stuff. And this is no different.
Well, we could always sell them Simply Safe for pipelines.
Yeah, I mean, SP Futures are 27.
You mentioned drones. One of the ways to, if you were worried about, you know, people putting explosives along your pipeline, it's actually pretty cheap to have drones doing your patrol for you.
Well, that's true. SP Futures are 26.
And not only would they do it with cameras, but you know, you'd still have to have someone monitoring and watching at all times. They actually, have the technology now to just sort of construct a map of it and look for anomalies so that they could report it back to you and set off alarms when something strange is.
You weren't supposed to tell anybody that I was designing attack drones to kill anybody else's drone. SP Futures up 20. You know what ad's coming. SP Futures up 27. SP Futures up 138. Be right back. Stocks with Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. This is Matt Weber on the board. We're fighting here about whether we should give ransom. I want some ransom. What do I got to do to get some?
Well, apparently they'll cave and pay.
Now, you got some guy that can have me hack into something? What can we hack into? Like the Dunkin' Donuts or something? Get some coffee?
They probably have a pretty strong network.
God, you're probably right. They probably do. SP Futures up 28 as the...
They have a great app.
As the bounce continues. As their futures up 145. Dow futures up 148. Yeah, I bet they... I'm sure, you know what? They probably do. DAX up 111.7%. They've been down 2 days in a row. They've been down all week pretty much. FTSE up 47.7%. CAC around up 50.8%. So we're bouncing there. We're in Asia. Nikkei up 636, which is 2.3%, which gives us back everything that was there yesterday. So we're redoing some ground here. Shanghai up 60. That's 1.8%. Hang Seng up 308, 1.1. So way of review yesterday. Dow up 433 the day before. They were down a little lower than that. S&P futures up 49 yesterday. They were down like 90 the day before. NASDAQ up 93. They were down almost 300 the day before. So, had a pretty good bounce yesterday, and we're kind of on track to maybe get back most of Wednesday's loss if we combine the two, if we stay where we are today. Bonds, 10-year down 2 basis points, 1.64. The bond minus 0.12, it got up to minus 0.09 the other day, but now it's sinking just a little bit. Japan, 0.08 positive, UK, 0.87 positive. Oil, rallying again, up 91 cents, 64.73. Brent up a buck, 68.06. Natural gas up 2 cents, 2.99. RBOB up another 2 cents, 2.11. So actually it bounced back a little bit, even though the pipeline is now, at least starting to be open. Gold is up $10 to $18.34. Silver up 27 cents, $27.32. Copper down 3 cents, $4.65. Still at pretty rarefied levels. Palladium $29.01. It's $37. And we got the crypto up 1,700. Is a Bitcoin 50,406. So it's made back some of what the Elon Musk turning away from it. He's that guy. He can move this Bitcoin around. I'll say that for him. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We had an earlier vehicle fire on the inbound Eisenhower just before 9th Avenue. That apparently has been cleared, so that's the good news. The bad news is there's some resulting congestion and stop-and-go traffic as you're heading in on I-290 from the western suburbs. So keep that in mind. That's our slowest moving expressway right now is the inbound I-290 out west. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy, all quiet there. Same for the Stevenson, some red around Cicero near Midway, but no accidents to report. Southside Expressways, it looks like we have somewhat of an issue on the Bishop Ford. This is on the outbound side at Sibley Boulevard. There's some road work that's closing the exit to eastbound Sibley and the entrance from the west, from the westbound side. That work is underway, and this has Bishop Ford exit and entrance ramps closed at Sibley. So that's causing a bit of an issue right around there. No issues on the Ryan or I-57. Lakeshore Drive looking good in both directions. Off the expressways, we're all quiet. So enjoy a nice quiet commute with the possible exception on the inbound Eisenhower. Weather today, partly cloudy skies, lots of sunshine, a high of 65, which will feel nice. Right now it's clear and 48 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, it's a hot one today. Sunshine with a high of 101. They've hit triple digits, and it's only mid-May. Right now it's clear and 72. In sports, White Sox keep on winning. They swept the Twins, winning yesterday 4-2, as the Red Hot Sox are now considered one of the best teams in baseball, if not the best, after the week they've had. Cubs were off. They're in Detroit tonight, looking to bounce back after getting swept in a brief two-game set in Cleveland. First pitch tonight is 6:10 Central Time. Diamondbacks lost to the Marlins 5-1. NBA basketball, the Bulls are still alive, Chief. They blew out the Raptors last night, 114-102. And the Wizards lost their game earlier, so the Bulls are now two games back with two to play of the Wizards for the final play-in spot. Bulls just have to win out, and they need the Wizards to lose out, and then they'll have some sort of tiebreaker, which I actually don't know what that is. I'll have to look
it up. I think they have the tiebreaker.
I think the Bulls own the tiebreaker based on head-to-head, right?
Yeah, but the Bulls are playing two teams that are pretty good. Have they all clinched to the point where they don't care if they win, or who do the Wizards have to play?
That's a good question. I can find out real quick. So it looks like the Bulls play at the Nets on the 15th. And then for some reason it doesn't show me.
They're playing the Bucks here the last game on Sunday.
Yeah, so it looks like they play at the Nets and they play the Bucks. So
the Bucks going to have five starters on the bench.
So both of those teams are obviously really good and could rest guys. Absolutely they could. Don't know that they will, but they certainly could. The Wizards play the Cavs, who are the worst team in basketball. So I would be shocked if the Wizards lost that game. Lastly, the Suns, who are now the number two seed in the West and still have a chance to get the top seed, they topped the Blazers last night, 118-117.
Hey, either one of you dudes, before I research some this weekend, I mean, I'm fairly up to speed on what was given to, you know, canal companies and railroads and things like that when they were originally built, but I don't really know the deal that pipelines have. I mean, for instance, the I&M Canal here in Chicago that people, you know, even forget is here. The people who built the canal were given, I believe, every other square mile of property in the city, right, Kevin? To be able to sell that for money to make the canal. Of course, there was nobody living here but Native Americans at the time, so it wasn't exactly like it was Manhattan, but they were given every other. That's why the city of Chicago is on a grid system. They spec'd it out on square miles, and I think the canal company, whoever the hell they were, got every other square mile within the city limits or some bizarre thing like that. And the railroads got sometimes 20 to 30 miles on each side of the tracks. The five western railroads ended up getting 20-22% of all the property in the U.S. for building the railroads. Now the pipelines, some of them I think are just on other people's right-of-ways, Kevin. But this colonial thing, that thing's I saw some pictures of it from the air. That's every bit as long, wide, maybe even wider than a railroad right away. So were they?
Yeah, it's got four pipelines.
Yeah, were they given all that property way back in the day and stuff on each?
No, I don't know the history of it, and I don't know how old the pipeline is. That's a good question, and it's probably easily discoverable while we talk, which I can check that. But the you know, for the most part, at least the way it's been happening for quite a few years now, is that, you know, right-of-ways are, for long hauls like that, are typically done along railroad tracks or near railroad tracks and along interstate highways or major U.S. highways, because then they don't have to buy up right-of-ways parcel by parcel, from individual landowners.
Well, it's
so when the pipeline was built, I don't know what the circumstances were.
Well, it's interesting when they built the Transcontinental Railroad. Obviously, the people who surveyed it was what the hell was the guy's name? I'll remember it. But he surveyed it pretty much by eyesight, and was dodging arrows literally while he was doing it. And I-80 is essentially the same thing, the same place. And it was done by satellite. And the difference, what's the furthest they're apart, is like a mile. That's how good these guys surveyed the thing when they first did it by eyesight. I mean, these engineers, I mean, it's how good these guys were, or how good a lot of engineers are, that even by satellite, they basically did no better, a little bit better, but not much. Pretty scary. All right, Kevin, what about We've got these economic numbers.
Well, before we get off of the sports, the White Sox have the best record in baseball.
Yeah. I was telling
that's eight. Right. They're so the Sox are 22-13, which is a .629 winning percentage, which puts them the best in all of baseball. Certainly the best in the American League, as the Red Sox are 23-16, and the A's are 23-16 as well. Those would be the two closest teams. On the NL side, the Giants are the best team at 23-14, a .622 winning percentage. So really, they're right there. And then the Cardinals are 23-15, .605. So it's White Sox, Giants, Cardinals. Right now,
the Giants are supposed to be good next year, right?
Yeah, they're a little ahead of schedule, and they still, you know, it's early. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Dodgers and or the Padres, you know, came back and overtook that division. But right now, the Giants are playing real good ball.
How did the Cardinals get so good all of a sudden?
Well, they've signed the best player, best third baseman in baseball, or traded for him, Nolan Arenado, and that was a big, big difference maker. You had him with Goldschmidt, and basically they added the best first baseman and the best third baseman of the last 10 years. They added those guys in the last 3 years and just totally revamped their the middle of their order. They've always had good starting pitching and, you know, good sort of contact speed guys, but now they have big boppers in the middle, and they're coming together.
Did anybody pick up Pujols, or is he out? So.
I think he's still. I haven't heard anyone signing him.
No, that's why he's not even worth
a lot of people thought the Sox would because of the La Russa relationship and connection, but they came out and said that we don't really have a spot for him. So,
and where are you going to put him?
I mean, at this point, he's a DH for the most part that can play some first base, and the White Sox have a guy that's pretty damn good there. So,
well, and plus they got two guys on the. They got one guy's coming back. What, maybe this summer? The tendon guy?
Yeah. I mean, Robert and Jimenez could both come back this year, but they're both out 3 to 4 months. I mean, significant injuries.
Yeah, I worry more about the tendon, I think, will heal on Jimenez. The guy with the... When you're a speed guy and somehow or another you wreck up a hip flex, wow, it's... I don't know how that comes back 100%.
Just running to first base, too. That's the weird thing.
Like, yeah.
I mean, you see the hamstring every once in a while, but to just blow out your hip like that when you're just running to first, that was surprising, especially a young guy like that.
Yeah, you know,
yeah, I can see it. I can see it with me.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, he's what, 20, 21?
Yeah, but you don't
like
go fast enough to pull a hamstring.
You know, that's a good Lou Holtz quote. Yeah, when he was talking about one of his halfbacks, Lee Becton, pulled a hamstring. He said he's not fast enough to pull a hamstring.
Lou's a character. That's all this crazy stuff.
He was very quotable. Nothing else, it was, whatever you think of his coaching, his press conferences were fun.
You know, it's funny. They talk about people with, who's the guy from the Giants? The something tree, and all these guys got these trees of coaches that work for him. A lot of guys work for Lou Holtz. Pete Carroll worked for him in Minnesota. He's a fairly significant coaching tree.
Oh, he had Urban Meyer, Barry Alvarez. Yeah. He's had a lot of good coaches.
And but he doesn't have a tree, you know, like other guys do. It's who's the guy I'm talking about? The guy from the Giants, and he went to the Jets. That tells his name, curly hair. I'll think of it. Bill something something. Was the coach of the New York Giants. He won the Super Bowl.
Jim about Parcells?
Yeah.
Oh, Parcells.
There's the Parcells tree, and now there's the Aaron's tree.
The Belichick tree.
Yeah, the Belichick tree. All the guys. There's like five guys that have trees.
Bill Walsh.
Yeah. I mean, Lou Holtz doesn't have a tree yet, but he's got a bunch of guys. So.
Well, speaking of, real quick, and not to put you on the spot, Kevin, but we're talking NCAA. Have you been following the NIL stuff, the name and likeness stuff, and how I think five states now have basically allowed players to receive benefits and compensation for their own name and likeness, and many other states are planning to follow? Talk about some recruiting advantages. It looks like Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, and New Mexico are the first five states that are now allowing college athletes to make money off their name and likeness.
Yeah, and the NCAA, as usual, is behind the wave on this one.
As usual,
and this was one that they really needed years ago to be ahead on this, especially when the O'Bannon suit, when they lost the O'Bannon suit. What's that been? Like 7-8 years now since they lost it.
At least,
still, are not on top of this, and it's just so crazy because they can't make the rules once other people have made the rules for them. And I'm totally in favor of the players getting to use their name, image, likeness rights. And I don't think there are very many who are going to make a fortune off of it. You know, if you think about the, how many college football players, or even for that matter, college basketball players, have become really well known nationally before they became professionals. You know, how many college football players can you name over the last 10 years or so who were really, you know, national brand type of players?
Johnny Football.
That would be one.
Well, Johnny Football for a little while, yeah, he had it. Tebow was probably a pretty recognizable, he probably had more value as a college player than he ever did as a pro player.
Now he's going to be a tight end at age 34.
And occasionally you'll get another one, but they're few and far between. It's really going to be more local that someone's going to be able to go do, autograph signing or make a poster and go do an autograph session at a local car dealer or store, get an appearance fee to go to Dick's Sporting Goods, the local Dick's Sporting Goods, and they come out and I could see this spilling into some of the other sports just as much as it would spill into football or basketball. But it might be the rowing season's going to start. You know, the outdoor season's going to start. So you get the rowing team down to do an appearance and some kind of demonstration at your store, and that wouldn't cost the store very much. And it might be a little bit of a little bit of beer money for the rowing team. I could see the women's basketball team in some towns is pretty popular, so an appearance by the whole team. I could see all of that kind of happening, or the offensive line makes a poster and has something. I could see all of that kind of thing happening at a local level, but I don't think it's going to be a big deal nationally.
Well, Kevin, it's got so insidious. Just for listeners to know, everybody's like, why do these guys have to do autographs? Well, back in the day, we're talking 40 years ago, probably, Dr. J's four, so he was the third brother, Paul Majerian, absolutely one of the nicest men I've ever met, and unfortunately died of ALS maybe 10 years ago. He was the opposite linebacker at Cal Berkeley when Ron Rivera was the All-American. Paul was the starter on the other side, and they were best of friends. Well, Paul always wanted to be, he thought maybe he wanted to be a stuntman for a while, which is, by the way, like the hardest union to get into, because he wanted to be an actor and a stuntman. So he gets recruited by, like, and we're talking about, maybe like Kohl's or somebody. I mean, we're talking about, Middle America catalog, and he was going to be like a model for like flannel shirts or something. And it wasn't going to say Paul Majerian, outside linebacker of Kohl's presents you with this flannel shirt. He was just going to be the guy on a page, just standing there in his flannel shirt, not naked, not anything. And Berkeley said, "Nah, you can't do that. You can't make it." This was going to be his summer job to do stuff in catalog modeling, basically with his clothes on. But I don't even know his name. You don't even know the name of the model in those things, like a Sears catalog.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous overreach. Yeah. I wonder if by allowing this, assuming more and more states will follow, and then hopefully it just becomes a sort of a national acceptance, if it'll actually clean up recruiting a little bit. When you shine a light on stuff and kind of let people make money off their name, image, and likeness, then maybe the duffel bag full of cash goes away to a certain extent, and the slimy coaches in college basketball specifically, but I guess it would apply to football too, don't have such a huge advantage anymore. And maybe that's wishful thinking, but do you see any possibility of that?
I'm going to say it could just make things way crooked, more crooked.
Or it could go the other way. Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's so crooked right now.
Yeah, I could see, that you now you arrange with the local businesses to to overpay and to as a way of laundering money. You don't need a booster club anymore. You just need the boosters to own businesses and the businesses to pay people for appearances. So and so it sort of becomes the equivalent of the old days when people had a lot of shadow jobs. You know, you'd get your athletes a job to do nothing. Now your athletes are in school in the summer, so and they don't have jobs. So this would just be another way of doing it. I think, you know, it's the more above board the transactions are, the better, I think. But I don't think it'll go away.
Well, I just think there's a lot of coaches, and, you know, I cheer for Iowa basketball, and Coach McCaffrey, who was a longtime assistant under Digger Phelps and Notre Dame guy, he just does not cheat. And he, to the point where he won't even take transfers. He's just now opening up to the transfer portal because he thinks that's so slimy. And I respect him for it, and they're a very competitive team. In fact, they had a really good team this year. They were top five for most of the year, and then they lost in the second round of the tournament, unfortunately. But he just will not participate in that, and I feel like it kills him in the recruiting process because he won't do it. Yet, I think he's right, and I know Mike Bray is in that same sort of mode where they just don't cheat, and then meanwhile they fall behind because cheaters are everywhere in that business. If everyone now can do this legally and it's not against the rules, I think it actually helps the clean coaches a little bit.
But
maybe I'm naive.
What's legal? I mean, you can...
I think you're right, Matt. I think that gives him an opportunity to participate in some of the cash exchange, or at least his school to participate in some of the cash exchange, because it's legal now.
Well, everything... We talk all the time, well, not all the time, once in a while I talk, nobody remembers, but say if you have a problem with the Dan Ryan Expressway and you pay somebody too much money and you're the mayor, I know that I have money in somebody else's pocket that's really my money. So I can say, hey, Matt, I need you to, you just got this contract, Kevin's running for judge, I need you to show up and buy 25 tickets for this fundraiser of his. And you do. Just like I knew people, this is a long time ago, way past any kind of statute of limitations, I knew people in Chicago that would hire Notre Dame football players for the summer. I'm sure people did it for Alabama and everybody else. I don't know if they ever showed up. And they made, you know, when a regular person's making $1,000 for a summer, these guys are making five. And who knows if they showed up or not. Now, if you have an autograph thing and Thomas shows up and he's the autograph guy, what's to say that I don't have 25 family members, I give them all a $50 bill and say, go over there and get your autograph from Thomas and buy it from him. What's the difference? I mean, you never know if this stuff is crooked or not. Right? I mean, do you honestly...
You're right about that.
I mean that's how... It's out in the open, but why can't I just... Hey, you idiots out of the bar, do me a favor. Walk down the block, and here's $50, you can back, there'll be a beer in the bar for you. I mean, you can crooked up any of this stuff if you want. Whenever it's cash involved, how do you know where it's coming from?
Well, so I guess my last question would be, so, you know, the five states that I read off a minute ago that rushed to legalize this first, you know, four of the five being right in the heart of the SEC, of course, is that a recruiting advantage? I mean, if you are one of those big-time athletes like we mentioned, like Kevin said, I don't think there's a ton of them, but there are some. Maybe every year there's maybe, call it five guys or something like that, that are going to make, you know, a decent amount of money for that particular season. Do they go to one of those teams in those states this year specifically for that reason?
Well, I'm going to ask you, is it passive?
You know, more likely in football, I would think, because they have to be there for 3 years. I think it's probably, for the big name people, the one and done types of guys, it's more likely to be, trivial. It just doesn't matter on the side. I want to go where I'm going to get exposure, and
right.
I want to go where I'm going to get to show off what I do so that I can get drafted. And even if it's not a one and done, it's going to be two and done.
Can the university be a part of it?
No. Every proposal that I've seen has said it's between the athlete and the whoever pays for the,
so I can't,
you know, whoever's paying them.
Right, if I'm Alabama, I can't say to Matt Weber, if we sell a jersey in the bookstore or online, it says Weber, you're going to get $20 a jersey. At Notre Dame, they're not going to give you anything. They're just going to sell the Weber name.
Well, at the moment, the schools are not allowed to sell jerseys with people's names on them.
I guess what I'm saying is that'd be the first line of cash, because if you're the big quarterback, everybody's going to want your jersey, right?
That's an interesting question.
They just buy the number, and everybody knows who that is.
It would be better if you had the name.
Yeah, because that's what they've done forever now, is just buy the number. But now, if you're in one of those states, can they put the name on the back?
Well, here's the question. I don't think the school is. I think the NCAA still prohibits the school from doing it, and the athlete doesn't own the rights to the university logo.
Right.
You own the rights to your own name, image, likeness, but you don't own the rights to the university stuff.
Maybe how does it work in the NFL?
I'm kind of thinking that one's not going to happen.
The NFL, you get a piece of every jersey sold.
Of your name on it.
Yeah, yep, that's right.
They have a bargaining organization behind them. It's called the NFL Players Association.
And it's tracked, too. And players, you can look up exactly how many, which guys are selling the most jerseys and how much they're making.
So Urlacher still gets a piece of a jersey to get sold.
That's right, for the rest of his life. By the way, Bob writes in, I think this will be just another way for student-athletes to be taken advantage of.
Well, well,
yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. That's probably... that's a very cynical point of view there, Bob. I don't know how anybody could be cynical about the NCAA.
All right, Kevin, we only got a minute. What do you see in inflation in your burb?
I went out to breakfast last Saturday morning, and what do you suppose I paid for 2 eggs? 2 sausage, 2 bacon, and a plate of biscuits and gravy.
Well, if it was here, it'd be like $14 or $12.50.
Yeah, $7.99 here.
That's not bad.
Where man, is that's
it's, worth,
say,
it's worth the drive.
We might have to make a road trip.
No kidding. There are many things here that don't have that kind of inflation, but there are all the standard stuff that is inflated. Lumber is in. You know, just like everywhere else, is incredibly expensive, we're seeing it in lots of areas. Gas prices, of course, are up. But when I say up, when I was out yesterday, I saw $2.99. That was the horrible gas price.
And well, last year
higher in Chicago.
Well, last year at this time,
there are some things about living in Southwest Michigan, North Central Indiana, that are substantially cheaper than in the urban areas, and then there are other things that just show up like the same way that you do.
Yep. Well, Kevin, thank you very much, buddy. We'll talk at you next week. Have a nice weekend. S&P futures up 29, NASDAQ futures up 139. Come back, Mr. Carl Denninger. We'll dig more into this inflation and all the other stuff that's going on and see if it's going to affect the market, whether we should go long or short here. We'll be right back.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Weber on the board. S&P futures up 29. NASDAQ futures up 137. As we're trying for day two of the bounce after the first 3 days of the week were about as bad as it had been in years. So we'll see if the bounce continues today or the bouncers get a little weak. Carl, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. You know, it's a Friday.
So did you get your piece of the ransomware?
Tomorrow's a Saturday.
Did you get your piece of the ransomware from the Colonial Pipeline?
You know, I've written a couple of rather scathing columns on that in the last few days.
I know.
Why is it that we have people in the so-called regulatory world in this country who have not immediately thrown every one of those pukes in prison? All of them.
Which pukes are we talking about? The ones in Russia or the ones here?
The ones here. You know, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, one of my first programming jobs, one of the first things I did, was writing control software that ran the large 11-meter dishes that all of your cable TV went through, and, unknown to a lot of people, that's also how you got data across oceans when the cables were not fiber optic, they were copper for calls, and you couldn't really run data down that because it was too far. So that's how you got data from here to Europe, for example, was over microwave links that went up through the communication satellites. Well, those things are dangerous. They're on top of buildings. If you drive them too far, they hit buildings. And they do serious damage because they're really heavy and they have great big motors on them. And on top of that, if you do the wrong sort of things with the signal switching, you either destroy very expensive equipment and you could kill people. So those things were, in fact, connected to other things so that you had a nice little terminal down in the control room where you were, you know, scheduling what you were going to put on what. And you could change where the dish was pointed and how it was aligned and the polarization, things like this. Okay, that's fine. I wrote the code that made all those things talk to each other and made all that stuff happen. The idea that you would allow somebody to get into that from somewhere outside that building is criminally insane.
I've been broaching this subject from a much simple man sort, Carl, and everybody tells me I'm nuts. So maybe we're both nuts. I'll tell my story real briefly again. I went to one of these ethanol facilities. And, you know, it's a massive still, right? And
right.
And there's got to be, you know, 1,000, 2,000, how many, what do you want to call them? Like the garden hose things, you open the knobs for you know, stuff going down this pipe, that pipe. That's what it is. And the guy says to me, the owner, I said, well, how do people run this place? He goes, you run them from those two chairs. He goes, you can't get in from the outside, out from the inside. The two guys sitting there with the Green Bay Packer hats on those chairs and those big terminals, they run the whole place. And if they, he goes, the idea, I don't want anybody being able to get in here from the outside. I mean, and I know that's so simple and such a sophomoric type thing to say, but why does this all have to be so open to the outside? So somebody can work from home or what?
So it's for several reasons. Okay, the first one is that corporate America has gone down this stupid idea that we should put everything we can in the cloud, and it makes things so easier, and it's cheaper, and that's the real reason, okay? Nobody wants to talk about, you know, hey, listen, you got a pipeline? Well, guess what? That means you have a right-of-way, because the pipe has to go down a piece of land, right, somewhere? So why don't you run a piece of fiber optic cable down that same right-of-way that you already have, you already secured it in order to run the pipe, and run all of your command and control and stuff for the equipment on both ends down that very same right-of-way? It does go to the terminal, right? Where, I mean, that's where the pipe ends up, is it, you know, with where the stuff has to come from or go to. Duh.
Yeah.
And so, but no. That costs money. And then you have to maintain it, and you have to have the repeaters, and that costs money. So what we're going to do instead is we're going to put all this stuff on, you know, through some sort of internet connection somewhere. But wait a minute, you're going to do what? Okay, and then it gets better, because you can have a connection. For example, I could have an employee that needs to work from home. So he has a computer, and when he turns it on, it nails up a connection into the infrastructure at the office. And that's the only place it goes. And that machine is completely locked down. He cannot do anything. He can't load anything on it. He can't plug a thumb drive into the USB port. None of that stuff works. If he tampers with it, the keys that are in there for the disk refuse to be released, and the machine will not start. He has to bring it back to IT, and as soon as he does that, he gets fired because he screwed with it. And I don't care who it is. The DOD does this every single day. And this is why the DOD doesn't get broken into and doesn't have these kinds of things happen, because you can't do anything else from there. And on the inside network, you can't type in Facebook and go chat with your buds and about how wonderful your kid's soccer game was from your computer that you're supposed to be using for work. But the snowflakes in corporate America insist that their phone work, they insist that they, when they're sitting at their desk, that their computer be able to do something other than do their job.
Well, yeah.
And if you need to have people that can do internet research and things like that, fine. Then there's a second computer that sits on their desk, and that one can get outside. And the two are on completely physically separate networks. There is no interconnection between them, period, end of discussion, and the problem solved. And yet nobody does this, because it costs an extra few dollars, and oh my gosh, we can't possibly have people that we hire that we expect to actually work for 8 hours out of the day. No, they got to be. Their phone has to work in the building. And by God, if it's a steel building and the signal doesn't get through those walls, because you know concrete, steel do not pass cell signals very well. Well, then we're going to let them use the Wi-Fi network in the building so they can get out, so that they can have their little thing.
Well, the I know one that does. Stocks and Jocks is totally separate from PTI Securities.
But the thing is that there is the engineering to do this is not impossible. It is not even very difficult. What it is a little more expensive, because you have to do your own thing, okay? And then in addition to that, it means that you're going to have a bunch of 20 and 30 somethings that are going to be bent out of shape because they can't play instead of work.
Right. Oh yeah. Well, you know,
and that's the reason that this keeps happening. Look, exchange. This thing with SolarWinds, which, you know, was in the news a few months ago, right? Exchange, literally, something like 15 years ago, I have to go back and look at the exact date, I was hired to write a front-end piece of software because the organization that hired me to do it knew full well that Exchange was insecure. It should not be on an internet connection, period, ever, end of discussion. But they wanted to use it in-house, because they found it useful for calendars and contact lists and stuff like this, which it is. Okay, fine. So I was contracted to write a piece of code that sat on a dedicated box with two Ethernet connections, one that went to the outside and was the only thing that went to the outside, and the other one went to the inside, and it took all the transactions and front-ended them so that they were safe.
Well, it's so bizarre, Carl. AT&T calls me, and they keep wanting to put our stuff on a Wi-Fi. Well, here, we'll put all your stuff on a Wi-Fi. I go, it's a securities firm. We don't want anybody on a Wi-Fi. What is the matter with you? Finally said to this one guy. He goes, everybody's on Wi-Fi now. I go, we're not going to have any chance that somebody could hack into our system. I mean, from a Wi-Fi. I don't think anybody get anybody's accounts anyway, but still, I don't know enough to say that, but I know that if it's not available, they can't. Right? I mean,
well, it's rather difficult to hack something that isn't there, right?
Right. So, hey, I got a question for you. When I'm looking at these, the amount of savings per family that's goosing up here. I think a lot of it's with the money that's coming down the line for some of these businesses, but it's really gone up dramatically in the last 4 years, from like 7,000 a family to like 35. And we actually have a little bit of a decrease in credit card debt, but it's always being, you know, totally overwhelmed by debt per taxpayer in terms of
right.
What you. But my question to you is, and I should know this being the alleged economist of the group, where exactly does the Fed's balance sheet get counted? It's not in national. Your national debt's up to $28.3 trillion, and there's probably another something there if you look at unfunded mandates. But where does the $7.5 trillion of the Fed is? It's not considered a debt anywhere, but it's also something. I mean, what is it? I don't think it was ever even addressed when I was in school, so I honestly don't know the answer.
You know, I think it is in the Z1, the flow of funds report. I stopped doing the quarterly update that I used to do on a regular basis about 5 years ago, and the reason was that when Obama was in office towards the, you know, as he got a little bit further into his terms, the Fed started changing where they put things. They moved different categories of debt around. So, where it really got nasty was when they moved the student loan stuff.
Right.
And what ended up happening there is that it, and this is, you know, I don't care if somebody adds a column to a table, okay? That doesn't really bother me at all because it's just new information. But what they did was they went back and retroactively recalculated all of this and essentially changed data that I'd had in that table and in that series for, oh God, it went back like 15 years. So I looked at this and could I have gone back and reconciled? Yeah, if I wanted to spend, you know, 2 months doing it. Or I could just take the current data and just ignore all the historic, which of course, you know, that's not a very good answer either, right? So I just said, you know what, this is now becoming a game of hide the sausage. And the whole point of doing it is to prevent people from being able to analyze trends and make sense out of it without having to speculate, which I don't like to do. And it's only gotten worse. I mean, my guess is that it's, I'm sure it's there, but where they've hidden it, who knows?
No, I'm not talking about hiding it. I'm talking about, I'm having a brain fart. And what exactly is it? I mean, there's always been a Fed balance sheet that's allowed them to buy and sell. Well, they didn't have as much. I mean, they keep saying what they should have done in the Depression, but they didn't have anywhere near the capability of doing it. There wasn't enough stuff to buy. I don't think there was enough the inventory. But now they keep increasing the stuff that they're going to buy. So they essentially have taken a balance sheet that you probably needed really no more than, I'm going to say, $500 billion to do your day-to-day activities in the open market to maintain your money supply where you want it. Well, they pushed that to $7.5 trillion. So we've got essentially $7 trillion that we printed and basically, I mean, let's put it this way: when the Treasury goes out and borrows from the population, that goes into your deficit, correct? That's money that has to be paid back because obviously the checks have to bounce, right? Or have to balance, not bounce. And normally that number comes up in this national debt. Now you might fart around with it a little bit, and by not putting stuff in there that you owe and things like that. But by and large, it's sort of in there. But when the Fed goes out and actually buys those bonds back, I mean, it's addition to that, right? Is it part of the 28 or is it 7 trillion additional?
No, it's part of it because the Fed does not have the ability to actually create anything. So this is, there's a lot of people that always want to rag on the Fed as being responsible for this or that. But the truth of the matter is that if Congress did not spend more money than they took in taxes, the Fed would not have anything to play with. So there, yeah, I mean, other than the small amount that they have to balance their books, right, and balance the flow of funds through the system. But the, and I mean, that's their primary function, if you think about it, is to make sure that, you know, bank here, you know, loans money to Joe. Joe buys a car. Car dealer deposits the money. There's an imbalance between those two institutions for a period of time, right? So that needs to be balanced out throughout the system. But what the Fed gets enabled to do with all of this craziness is, you know, Congress just goes out and says, well, you know, we're just going to spend another $6 trillion. And so they spend the $6 trillion. Well, but where'd they get it from? Well, they printed it into existence by issuing Treasury securities, and then the Fed is able to issue cash against those. So yes, it is there on the on the floor of funds and on the balance sheet. But it isn't the Federal Reserve that's responsible for this policy. It's the Congress.
Okay. But when they go out and start buying stuff that's not the federal, I get that piece where this is obviously what we learned way back when, that essentially they're just taking up a chunk of the debt.
Right, okay? They're taking up a chunk of what Congress has done.
Right, so, but now when you go from the next step is you print the money and you go buy a mortgage bond or you buy my truck, what's that? Is it, now that part of the Fed balance sheet, is that more debt?
Yeah, yeah, that shows up in the But remember that somebody issued that to start with, and at least in theory, okay, there's supposed to be an asset behind that.
See,
the difference between what Congress does and what happens in the other case is that your truck is an asset or your house is an asset.
Okay,
so you're exchanging liquidity for an asset. You're basically liquefying assets,
right? But that's not the same as the two-step between the Fed issuing the bond and the Fed turning around and buying the bond back.
Well, except the Fed doesn't issue the bond; Congress issues.
I know, I understand
the bond. Treasury does.
I'm sorry, the Treasury issues the bond, and the Fed goes and buys it back. So it essentially is akin to the Treasury being able to just print the money and spend it. It's just a two-step.
Well, right. For all intents and purposes, yes, but the party that's responsible for that is Congress.
I understand that, but now when the Fed goes outside that little window and says we're going to go buy Maddie Weber's mortgage,
right?
I'm saying now that seems different to me. It's not. It's no longer the two step. It's now we're printing money, but now does that money have to get paid back because somebody's got to sell that mortgage and you have to sell it to who, and the who has to pay the Fed the money back, right?
Well, yeah, and that's, but see, here's the thing. Under the black letter of the law, unless the federal government has guaranteed that debt, in other words, Congress authorized the United States federal government to take the credit risk, okay, then that action is illegal.
But they're doing it every day.
And it goes on all the time. But this came up during the housing crash when the Fed started buying MBS, Fannie and Freddie paper, which they'd never done before. It's illegal for them to do it. On the face of every one of those prospectuses is a statement that debt is not guaranteed under the full faith and credit of the United States federal government. It carries no guarantee whatsoever. Now, as it turns out, the government, you know, the Treasury did back it, right, when push came to shove and Fannie and Freddie got in trouble. But on the face of the prospectus, it said that it's not, and what the Federal Reserve did when they started QE was a criminal act.
It was not allowed, correct?
It's illegal.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
The only non-federally backed debt the Federal Reserve is allowed to buy are what are called revenue anticipation notes that are issued by state and local governments. Basically an advance on the taxes, real estate tax or whatever you have to pay. And they're limited in duration to 12 months. And that is the only exception in the Federal Reserve Act. And that has not been amended. Now the interesting thing about this is all this has gone on over the years. We're still doing QE. We did TWIST. We did all the, you know, all the nonsense. Absolutely zero of that is legal, other than buying the Treasury debt, which is lawful.
Correct.
But the rest of it is not legal, The Federal Reserve has been doing it since the housing crash. Every bit of it is against the law.
Well, what in terms of timing, I mean, a lot of what the Fed is buying, in one man's opinion, I hope we're not over everybody's head here a little bit, but then again, I think our audience likes it.
No, I think you guys are explaining this stuff really well.
When if you go out and buy 5-6 years ago, you go out and buy all these 30-year bonds, right, for whatever reason, illegal, you go out and buy them. Well, interest rates are still going down. So you're not going to hold the things for 30 years because people are refinancing and are essentially paying off that mortgage really by the day.
Right.
So the Fed is getting this money put back to them, right? So they essentially have to keep going. If they say they're buying, and I don't know, maybe you know better than me. If they say they're buying $120 billion a month, I'm going to say a year ago, 60 of that, 50, 60, 40, whatever the number happens to be, is needed just to stay even because you're getting the money thrown back at you, right?
That's part of the that's part of the two step game.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that you end up goosing the effective money supply because money and credit spends exactly the same way.
Right.
Money comes into existence because you produce something that has value to somebody else. Credit comes into existence on the premise that you're going to do that in the future.
Well, you went through a period of time where you're going to get this money thrown back at you early. So your quote risk, isn't horrible, right? Because the interest rates are going your way. But if interest rates turn the other way, now all of a sudden there isn't going to be, there people are still going to sell their houses. So you're going to get some
right.
coming back at you. But you're not, nobody, I pity the fool who refinances when he's paying 3 and the new rate's 6, right? I mean, that's not going to happen. So all of a sudden now the Fed is stuck with essentially all kinds of mortgages at 2 or 3%. When the going rate's now 6, and those mortgages, if they're 30 years out or 25, the net value of the damn things is not going to be $400,000. It's going to be like 300, right?
Oh yeah, that's the thing is that it's the same thing happens with any kind of a bond, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if I can buy a 30-year bond today at 5%. Why would I buy your 3% one?
Right.
Right? The only way I'm going to do it is if you give me a discount that's the difference in the rate times the remaining duration. Otherwise, you can go ahead and sit on the capital loss.
And I guess where I'm getting to here is when Powell comes up with a number and says, we're going to buy $100 billion a month for the next 5 years. At some point, I mean, now, for instance, if everybody in the world is running around refinancing or a few months ago, he's essentially maybe barely breaking even. But now, 3 years from now, that $100 billion a month could be incredibly accretive because he's not getting any thrown back. I mean, in other words, the number isn't good enough, the one number, I guess, what he's telling us, to really let us know what's going on.
Yeah, it's not. But the problem is trying to figure out exactly what paper he's sitting on is very hard.
Yeah, it's not in any of the... Well, plus they're trying to give us less and less information. I mean, we're getting one.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, think about it. Which mortgage is in that bundle, right? I mean, isn't that exactly the sort of bait and switch game that led to the crash in the housing market?
Well, I've often wondered. I have, as you know, I got some buddies that are, of course, I don't see them anymore because the bars I used to see them have been closed for 15 months. But I used to always ask them, who exactly is it? One of you guys? I mean, if you go out and buy a basket of mortgages. I mean, I don't think the Fed, even though they have all kinds of people working there, 5-6 years ago, 10 years ago, I don't think the Fed had anybody in there who was a mortgage expert. So they're going to go to their usual buddies at the banks. You know, when you become somebody's regulator, after a while, you become their buddy, right?
Right.
And if you buy 1,000 mortgages from, I'll use Goldman Sachs, probably wasn't them, it was probably, somebody else, but if you use it, are we even sending, 5 Maddie Webbers out and said, do a random sample of these 1,000 mortgages, and you're going to go to 15 of them, use a random number table, which nobody even knows what those are anymore, and you're going to find 3 of them, have a fence around them with weeds, 8 of them, hopefully there's people living there paying their mortgage every month, and the other 3, people are behind a couple of money. And there's going to be some kind of a survey that says how good are these things. They're not all face value, right? I mean, are they just, I don't even know, are they paying? I've heard Congress people ask, Janet Yellen probably five times, Carl, on these, whatever the, where they gotta go in front of Congress once in a while, ask her how much they paid for these loans, and she never once said so. Never once said anything.
Well, of course not. And you know what? We heard the same thing when Bernanke was running the Fed. And when, I sat there at Humphrey Hawkins, how many times did I hear that sort of a question get tossed out there? And then here was the other thing, though. When they started with the whole MBS thing, I at the time, I still had a fax line, and I faxed all of members of Congress, including all the ones on the Finance Committee, and said, who's going to ask Bernanke how he's doing this, given that it's black letter illegal?
I don't think they care. And you know,
they don't care. But you know what? Look at what just happened with State Street. Did you see this thing last night?
I did not.
You want to get mad? State Street is another serial offender. They have been busted for something like 10 different criminal violations over the years related to robbing people, basically robbing their customers. Okay.
They just
admitted to doing it again. A deferred prosecution agreement. Nobody's going to jail, and the fine is half of what they stole.
That's bad. That's a bad fine. It's usually more like a quarter.
Well, guess what? But they've been stealing it for almost 20 years. It goes back all the way to like 2000. And oh, by the way, what did they do with all that money they stole during the last 20 years? You think they didn't make enough to cover it?
Well, that's why if you're big enough, you really want a regulator. It keeps you out of jail.
Well, yeah, but you know what? I want this deal where I can go rob banks, and if I get caught, I only have to pay back half of it, but I won't get prosecuted for 20 years, which means I can take the money I steal and go put it in the market and make money, and then I'll pay back half of it when I get busted.
See, now you're way above the other members of the people you're talking to. Manny Weber just wants to be able to steal a case of beer, and if he gets caught, bring back a six-pack.
Well, there you go. That works, too.
Let's keep it at simple level like Maddie and I are. S&P Futures up 20, S&P Futures up 21. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. It's Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 20. NASDAQ futures up 130. So we're still positive. We've come back a little. Retail sales were a little bit of a disappointment here. Unchanged versus a 1% increase expected. So that's kind of a lot. 1% versus none. I'm going to say that's like a real lot.
Are economists 0 for 3 now on their
pretty much
their estimates this week? Jesus.
Yeah, it's not so good. Dow futures up 172. Over in Europe, we've got rallies really across the board. The DAX up 108, although it was up more than this a little while ago. It's only 0.7%. It was up over a percent earlier. FTSE up 51.7. Yeah, these guys have come down since our last report, Matty. CAC round up 64. That's a full 1%. We're in Asia. Now, these guys haven't changed. Nikkei up 636. That's 2.3%. They were down heavy yesterday. Shanghai up 60, 1.8%. Hang Seng up 308, 1.1%. Hang Seng's been down heavy all week as well. Just yesterday review, Dow bounced back 433, S&P bounced back 49, NASDAQ 93, because we had 3 days in a row of really bad markets. Now we're going to have, well, we had one. Hopefully we'll have two bouncing back here. Bonds down 2 basis points to 164. Bund minus 0.13, Japan positive 0.08, and UK positive 0.86. Oil rallying up 63 cents, 64.45. Brent up 72 cents, 77. Natural gas up 2 cents, 2.99. RBOB unchanged at 2.10. Gold was rallying earlier. It continues to rally up 13.10, 18.37. Silver up 30 cents. That's a big move, over 1%, 1.1%, 27.36. Copper actually down on that gold, which is a little unusual. The rest of them up. It's 463. And for our favorite crypto, Bitcoin up 1,500 to 50,471. Individual stocks, Disney had earnings yesterday. Didn't like them that much, but they're not down that much. Down 778. It's trading 170.60. So it's down some, but not crazy. Everything else in the Dow I have up. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Heavy traffic volume starting to build now on the inbound Kennedy and also the inbound Eisenhower. We also had that earlier car fire on the Eisenhower. That's all clear now. Stevenson, traffic steady around Cicero. Then it clears up a bit. And then as you approach the circle, you'll see a lot of brake lights around there as well. Nothing out of the ordinary. Southside expressways are moving along nicely. Lakeshore Drive is quiet in both directions. Out in the suburbs, there's a couple of crashes to report. Looks like we have one at Belmont Road at Wisconsin Avenue. That's out west near Naperville. And then northwest in Elgin, Lawrence Avenue and McClure Avenue, there is a crash. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, it's a nice spring day today. Lots of sunshine, a high of 65. Right now it's crystal clear and 49 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a sunny and hot today, a high of 101. Right now it's clear and 73. In sports, the White Sox have now won 6 in a row and have the best record in all of baseball. They swept the Twins, winning yesterday 4-2. Red Hot Sox playing good ball. Cubs are off. They're in Detroit tonight to take on the Tigers. That's a 6:10 Central Time first pitch. Diamondbacks lost to the Marlins 5-1. NBA basketball, Bulls are hanging on by the skin of their teeth to a playoff chance. They beat the Raptors 114-102. So they're now 2 games back of the Wizards with 2 games to play. Bulls own the tiebreaker. So if they win out and the Wizards lose out, the Bulls would sneak into that playoff play-in game. If the Bulls lose a single game or if the Wizards win a single game, then
if the queen had ball, she'd be king.
Yes, the Bulls season is over. Suns are not in any worry of missing the playoffs. They're one of the best teams in NBA basketball this year, and they won again last night, beating the Blazers 118-117. Suns will at minimum be a 2 seed in the West, could be a 1 seed in the Western Conference. Chief.
There's got to be 4 or 5 games if you look at their season that absolutely were theirs for the taking in the last minute. They just managed to.
Maybe even 10.
Yeah, maybe even 10.
Like, and if you win 7 of those instead of losing all 10 of them, I mean, you talk about you're easily in the playoffs and you're having a big time successful season in a rebuild. And now, you know, I do think they're going to be a playoff team next year because I really like the core that they've built and I think they're going to be aggressive in free agency. But yeah, really disappointing this year to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, it's a kind of bizarre thing. So, Carl, what do you make of the inflation bugaboo? And I don't want to lead the witness here, because, but you don't lead very well. You have your own idea, so don't worry about that. The Fed, do they sound? We went from none to the latest the other day was the St. Louis guy saying that even if there's a lot of inflation, they're zeroing in on the real 2% that they still haven't maintained, and the other stuff is just transitory. So if the number comes in like at 10%, in their mind, it's still only 1%. The other 9's transitory. I mean, the guy was saying that. I kept thinking, why don't we get this buffoon off the stage? What is he talking about? I couldn't even follow it. I mean, or am I just too opinionated?
No, you're right, and he's crazy. And I mean, this is the grand illusion, because God forbid that the people, especially the business people, especially the market, get their, you know, wrap their arms around, hey, wait a minute, we've got a wage price spiral going on here. I think we do. Okay. And then, and by the way, I just took a quick look at March, which is the retail sales report, while we were on break, because it just came out.
Yep.
And it appears that the public has kind of figured this out, and some sort of really ugly bad things are showing up in that table.
Yeah,
to be specific, April and March are generally pretty flat months from the standpoint of, you know, like crazy things going on, right? Because there's no big holidays and stuff like that in there. But here's the thing. So you got gas stations up a little bit, and I'm looking at unadjusted numbers. I'm just looking at raw cash because these seasonal adjustments that all these people use is trash. But your building supplies and things like this, I mean, the gross increase is enormous in terms of percentages. Well, of course, that doesn't have anything to do with lumber, right?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. They're still not giving us, they'll resist this till the bitter end. They're still not giving us nominal and real numbers on this.
Here's the thing, though. All right, so building supplies 9% month over month.
Well, in just in general, the retail sales number, even if you go with some, half-assed Fed number of an inflation of 3% or something, if it's unchanged, it's really down 3%, right?
But the thing is, it's not. Here's the unadjusted number from March to April is actually down.
But their adjustment, I guess the point I'm trying to make is, their adjustment is a calendar adjustment. It's not an inflation adjustment.
There is no inflation adjustment in their numbers. They don't do it.
But we're getting close to the point where we need that.
Yeah.
Carl, can you remember? I mean, I'm not going to. I don't think you're as old as me. Can you remember? Right now, we're starting to see the. You just said it. We're starting to see this wage inflation, and To be honest, I don't know. I guess I see it, but I don't buy it necessarily, because I was just reading the details on McDonald's announcement yesterday, and I think that the people on the lower end of the scale have essentially haven't gotten a raise in 20 years. You know, so. They're so far behind the scale at this point that I don't even know where you put them. They're so far back behind the wagon train, they're not even part of the wagon train. And 20 years ago, the guy making at the McDonald's was probably making $8 an hour. Now he's making 10. And 20 years ago, I'm going to say the rest of the stuff on the menu has got to be double, easily double, So we've totally lost any kind of connection between, McDonald's doesn't do this, but the $5 cup of coffee I bought the other day and the person making $12 an hour behind the counter. I mean, if that person coughs up you know, I don't think they can do 50 an hour, but if they do 35 an hour, God's sake, that's $165 and they're making 10. That's real margin. I mean, obviously you got releases and all the other stuff, but now they're talking about raising their rates to $15 average by 2024. The rate inflation's going, the Big Mac's going to be $8 by 2024. I mean, we're not even, I'm split this way. I know an awful lot about the last 4 years or 5 years of the last inflation fiasco, when everybody was all set up. I remember the Volcker stuff. I remember the unions had gotten themselves COLA adjustments. Not just public employee unions, but I'm going to say real unions. I honestly don't remember, because I was in school and I was just too young and worried about playing basketball and stuff. I don't remember the fight and how long it took for labor at the time, which is much stronger than labor now, to actually fight those adjustments into their contract. I mean, they had to wait until the contract was due, right? And they also, they had to wait till it was such a huge problem that the other side said, yeah, we'll give it to you. I mean, there had to have been like a period of 3, 4, 5 years where inflation just gobbled up working people before they ended up at least having a fighting chance with these COLA adjustments and stuff. And I don't really remember that period very well. Can you comment on that? I mean, you probably can't because you're younger, but I mean, I don't know any of the hardships that were, because I was at Notre Dame. We had class about some of it, but I don't really know the fits and starts that a union guy who was making $20 an hour and 4 years later, the 20 is now, you know, worth 40% less, would that probably maybe 30% less. Do you recall any of that or ever written about that? I'll say at least the unions managed to rise up on their hind legs and at least get a piece of this. Because right now I don't see
it. Well, they got a piece of it, but there was a problem with that too, all right? So I saw a bunch of this as a teenager and going into young adulthood, because my father worked for a glass shop in Detroit that was a union shop. And ultimately, they literally put the company out of business.
Right. Well,
but there was, the thing is that the problem with this is somebody always gets the short end of the bat, if you will.
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
And usually somewhere that it hurts. And the thing is everybody scrambles to try to get their piece of it when it's going on. And I remember in the 1970s and early 1980s when it was, you know, when the wage price stuff was going on. And we were a supposedly middle class household. You know, like I said, my father was a CPA for crying out loud, right? I mean, you know, it's white collar work, okay? And yet I was told, and I liked orange juice out of a can, frozen stuff. And I was told, oh, you got to cut that back. We don't have enough money to keep buying as much of it as you'd like to drink.
Well, that's my point, Carl. I mean, because your dad, unfortunately, he was me at Pullman. I was an executive, for lack of a better term. We got a 5% raise. That was our max.
Right.
So, I mean, my point, here's where I'm going with this, is that I believe that the government, that the inflation is such an amazing lagging indicator. Everybody remembers that, you know, is old enough to still be, you know, not drooling on himself. Everyone remembers the last 2 or 3 years of that, when you would look around you and say, God, there's no inflation. I mean, Volcker has squeezed the hell out of this economy, yet the numbers were still percolating through. So your union members that had this COLA thing in there, or, you know, whoever had one, was benefiting when they didn't need to. Now, if you take what I'm trying to get to is, I'm thinking, if the same person, what he gained on the ass end of this, he lost in the beginning. Because I'll bet that it was also a lagging indicator in the beginning, like it is for us now. And I believe this inflation's been here for 10 years. We've been lying about it. So all of a sudden, I think the same thing's going to happen. I think the union guy back then, that the inflation started in 1969, he didn't get that COLA adjustment contract to 75.
Right.
And all the time people were telling you, all right, there is no inflation, there was. And then at the end of it, it kept percolating through the numbers, and the guy kept getting raises when he, quote, didn't deserve them.
Well, he kept getting raises, but the problem is that eventually what happens is you run up against the wall. And like I said, I see some of this data in the March table. Okay, so, you know, this is great if you happen to be a builder because, you can pass this through, right? And so this goes up. Well, guess what? Health and personal care stores down, clothing stores down substantially, sporting goods down, general merchandise stores down, and guess what else is down? What never goes down?
Don't tell me healthcare.
Amazon.
Yeah.
Non-store retailers.
All right, now be careful. It's very rare that I get to correct the Carl or add something to him. Very rare. I caught Lou the other day too. This will be a great week if I can catch Lou and catch Carl in the same week. That's, I don't think it's ever happened before. But you just mentioned talk about the builder. Even if the builder right now, and this is what I've been ranting at now for a couple of months, is when these bleeps lie on these numbers, Carl, and you and I think are in agreement on that. The CPI.
Yeah.
Right now, if you were a builder that said, and you would be smart enough to do this, especially since you talk to me a lot on this subject, at least I'm good at one subject, if we were going to contract 30 houses for somebody over the next 5 years, I guarantee you that the only two people in the world that would have an escalation clause in there is you and I, okay? And people are going to say, I don't even know what this is, right? But you and I would say,
yeah.
we want one. But I'm going to say that because of what the government's doing, they're not helping us at all. They're going to give us a 2% raise, and our lumber prices have gone up by 3 times. They're not helping us. At least when I was doing this for Pullman, I think the numbers were straight. That when the CPI was up 10% on the year, that was legit. That's what our expenses were. They were up about 10%. The government,
yeah, it really was about that. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the government didn't say, oh, by the way, our published numbers too. And you guys are up 10, but screw you. which is really, I mean, right now, what is, if you had one in there, what, if you have steel in your product, if you have, God help you, if you're contracting people for cereal and corn and wheat and oats are up, what, 3 times since last August? I mean, this CPI number is not helping you at all. It's screwing you.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. All I'm saying is that it's showing up in consumer behavior already.
Well, sure it is.
And because it's getting directed to the places where it has to go, all right, because, hey, you know, what if you don't eat? You got real problems, right? So it's going there, and where it's coming out of is places that up until now, all the way for the last, you know, 10 years, I can't tell you how rare outside of, like, a December, January, because, you know, we have this thing called Christmas, that non-store retail sales numbers are actually down on an unadjusted basis. Basically never happens.
That's scary. And some of these numbers, I went to this week I've gone to a couple of places that I haven't gone to in a long time because we're reopening some of the stuff. Carl, I don't think, I went to one of this Italian place the other night and I used to
bars are open up a little bit, by the way.
Well, I guess my point is that these guys had some specials on the board.
Right.
And there can't be 10 people in there eating dinner. Oh, I'm going to go back and enjoy myself with these guys a couple times. I'm not having dinner there. I mean, we're talking about a stuffed peppers for $24.
Oh, I know.
I mean, what are we talking? So I'm going to bring Audrey, and we're going to have an Italian dinner that I can cook for $5, and I'm going to cost me $130. But what planet are we at? I mean, if I were those guys, I'd talk to their lessor tomorrow and say, this dog doesn't hunt. I mean, something.
I mean, that's the problem with this sort of cost push situation is that you try to take it out on the customer because you have to put it somewhere, right? Where else
yeah.
is it going to go? And the problem is that you run into the wall rather quickly because the money just isn't there to service it and people don't see the value. And so, you know, well, I have no choice but to pay my car insurance bill and, you know, my power bill, and my groceries. But I sure do have a choice to not spend $130 for two people to have a couple of stuffed peppers.
Well, yeah, I mean, to try and find, even in the burbs now, unless you find a place where the guy's got a lease from wherever owns the place, I mean, the $12.50 omelet's all over the place. You know, and I mean, last time I was at the depot, I bought, 12 dozen jumbo eggs for $13. That's a lot of omelets.
Well, yeah, I mean, I go into Walmart or Kroger right now and buy a dozen eggs for under $1.
Well, you're doing better than we are. We're over that here. Of course, we get all the eggs that get along and don't have cages and all that stuff. They all like each other, so the eggs are more.
Well, you know, I can buy those too, but the last time I checked, when I break them, I can't tell the difference.
Yeah. You know, I had a, you probably remember, talk about, I had a girlfriend, okay, so it wasn't necessarily a date. We've been going for a long time. And I said, hey, there's this great place in Chicago that has, you get double yolk eggs, right? The place down by the, what's the name of the place? So it's down by the Union Station. She goes, let's go over there. Guess what? She gets some scramble and says, I don't know there's a difference. I said, well, they're not going to be any different scrambled. Just saying.
Yeah.
But and by the way, if you're of Italian ancestry and you get a double yolk egg, that's a lucky day. That's going to be your lucky day.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Where are we going? We've got the market doing this. We got these bonds sort of hanging. But even the Fed has to figure out at this point that to keep your interest rates low, you pour more money in the system. But then pour more money in the system, you just put gas on the fire of the inflation. Even they have to realize they're at somewhat of a turning point here, Carl. I have to believe.
Well, I think they are, and I think they do. And I mean, it's kind of interesting. Yeah, the March thing came out, and I'm taking a look at the TNX and the 10-year Treasuries. Ticked down on yield, which so what are we saying here that you hit the wall and this means rates are going to go lower? That's insanity, especially when you've got the government talking about let's throw another $6 trillion on the fire. At some point, this backs up, and when it does, I think it's going to be pretty violent.
Well, they were last time. I mean, some of your Fed funds rates went up like 2 and 3% in a couple of months back when this happened.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a very serious problem, and it's what I'd said when this started back in the March April timeframe of last year, is that typically this kind of monetary activity takes 12-18 months to filter through into the economy. Well, guess what? It's there now. And how long before it starts to show up in places that the Fed cannot ignore and can't make this, that's transit. That only works for a certain amount of time, folks. At some point, people are going to say, no, it isn't.
Well, how long do you think it's going to take for, I don't want to disparage any, I have obviously conversations with well, my clients, those conversations are easy, but the would-be clients, shall we say. And every once in a while, like every day or two, I'll get a call from somebody and says, well, geez, I got $2.5 million at Merrill Lynch or someplace. And well, how old are you? Well, I'm 75. Okay. And where exactly do you have it? Well, I'm hedged. Well, what does that mean? I'm diversified. What exactly does that mean? Well, I'm 50% bonds, 50% stocks. Okay. Well, how long a duration are your bonds? I don't know. Well, okay. hit me with a guess. Are they over 2 years? Oh, yeah. They're probably like 10, 12 years. It is not, and these are people that went through the same thing you and I did, and more so because they're older. The thought has not hit the general population right now yet that if you have bonds that are over 10 years that are essentially paying you less than the rate of inflation, that's a really bad investment. That has not hit people at all. I mean, right now today, like you said, but now with the numbers being bad, we're still in this good news, bad news thing. So the Fed has more room to pour more money in. I think that message is reaching the end of its run too. I mean, at some point, it happened in '82. When Volcker was squeezing the system when bad news was good news, and one day that ended too, Carl. But still, you're not. You don't get the 75-year-old person saying, well, wait a minute, I'm invested out 10 years at a rate that's less than what I think the inflation rate's going to be, and how that's only going to go bad for me. I mean, you're going to get paid, okay, probably, or from a government or from a good company. You're going to get paid. You're going to get your interest. But at some point, that thing's liable to trade 75 or 80.
That's the problem, exactly.
But I don't think that realization is there yet. It's getting closer, but it's just not there. I mean, I'll say to people, so if we get this straight, your old man, which I don't charge this kind of money, but we can charge. We don't usually charge a percentage, but we can at Wall Street. So if somebody gave me $10 million and I charge them, say, 0.5%, which is a third of what all the other guys charge, and I put it in a a 10-year bond at 1.6%, and I'm charging you a half, or better yet, I put it over in Europe for negative, and then I charge you a half on top of it. Well, God, that's like criminal. Well, what do you think people are doing? how do you think these numbers are getting? People are investing at those levels. Question is why, especially if you're like 80 years old.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the other crazy is that you have all these people that they think that this is, that somehow is balanced. Well, it's only balanced if one leg of the stool doesn't get kicked out from under you.
Well, right. Well, Carl, thank you very much, buddy.
Oh, by the way, it's likely to.
SP Futures, they were just only up 20, now we're back up 27. As if he was up 141. Like you say, the retail numbers were a disappointment. Numbers this week were disappointments, but it looks like we're bouncing again today after three bad days. Carl, talk at you next week. Matty, have a nice weekend. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.